It's nice, dude.
Was that English?
It was letters and numbers, man.
Damn, what's up, brother? Are you ready to let it rip?
Let it rip.
Awesome, man. Dan, thank you so much, bro. Obviously, you and I have known each other for some time. We've been in the same mentorships. I built one of your best brand kits, if I might say so, you know, from logo to graphics. But, bro, you've been on point, and obviously this podcast and this platform is to, you know, kind of compliment the people that are in this industry and that are doing very well for themselves. So, you know, you've kind of hit the mark with everything we do at the Force of Focus and the Flagship, from tattoos to music to fitness to branding to peptides to lifestyle to retiring in your fucking mid-30s. So give us a little bit of your background, man, how you kind of became Ibex Fitness and fucking where you are today, bro.
Ooh, that's a lot to unpack. Okay, we're going to also say retiring. I think I'm working twice as much as I was as a fireman. I'm probably making half the amount, but I'm happy. So
that's it.
Shoot, dude. Okay, we're going to give the synopsis. Firefighting was awesome. Totally enjoyed it. Also a lot of negatives. And not to totally derail, but even though you see firefighters and we're fitting, no, there's so much lack of sleep and call volume and just running that you are eating crap. You are grabbing the snacks to go. Your cortisol's through the roof. And so anyways, on the job as a active firefighter, I gained weight, ton of weight. I got up to, I'm only 5'9", short king, 230 pounds. My doctor told me, you are clinically obese. He referred me to a weight loss clinic. He was like, you need, too prideful. I didn't do that, but I was like, I'll figure something out. Yeah. Stupid, right? So I just started doing a self-transformation. I was like, dude, I need to figure out my life. Started losing weight, started doing stuff. And I had no plans to coach. I had no plans to do anything. Honestly, I had zero plan. It was literally a self-accountability. So I just started posting on Instagram as just a self-journal. And it was literally like, I know that I need to post tomorrow and I'm lazy. So I have to do something to make myself do something. And apparently that resonated. I posted for months and had nobody. I didn't even tell my wife that I made an Instagram account for my fitness stuff. It was literally just a journal. And I posted one reel and it was like, my name's Dan. I'm a dad. I was an alcoholic trying to get healthy and fit for my kids. And for some reason, the Instagram gods blessed it. And literally, I woke up the next morning and there was 15,000 followers. I was like, well, that's weird. What do you do with that? Yeah. And so, yeah, my brain was like, well, shoot. First off, imposter syndrome, I'm nobody. But also, clearly, there's a lot of people that apparently might be struggling too. And instead of like, hey, I know everything, it was a, hey, maybe I'll just come alongside you guys and just let's do this all together. So I just kept posting and kept doing stuff. And then, like you said, was able to join some mentorship programs. You designed my logo, everything, and made it into an actual brand instead of just a, I wouldn't call it a movement, but instead of just posting. And so it actually came from like, hey, now we have this, you know, position of authority. And yeah, I know that was a probably terrible synopsis, but.
No, not at all, dude. And I think you just nailed it, especially like you were one of the first brand kits that I really put. It's really where I kind of found my calling with your brand kit, putting that stuff together. Because first, you were the first person to give me an actual photo shoot. And I talk about this a lot, is like what you put in is what you get out of it. You know, if you give me a couple selfies, you know, in the mirror and there's like shit stains in the background, I'm like, what do I do with this? But you gave me a professional photo shoot that I was able to work with. And I spent a good like 12 hours just in a rat hole, just every little fucking detail. And I can kind of see your growth. You know what I mean? Like once you accepted that and you got it, like your brain just turned on from your packaging to your giving your t-shirts, your stickers. You treated your brand like a musician, like you were on fucking tour. And that's a rare breed to find, is people like you, me, and Mikey, who really take our brands to the next level. And I'm one of those dudes that's practicing logo first, as where a lot of people be like sales and marketing first. It's like, give your brand that look, give it that apparel, give it that full touch. Because I think it worked out in your favor, dude.
I think something that innately embodies, like, okay, maybe a terrible example, but if you actually have hung around like a celebrity or somebody, that they know they're like the way they operate and move. They're not like looking for people. They're almost trying to hide. People are looking for them and they move in such a way that's confidence. or pick a big brand, Apple. Apple doesn't need to give you see a clean looking phone that works well and stuff. You're like, that's cool. I want it. Yeah. And so I kind of looked at that from the get-go and I was like, maybe I am a nobody. I'm still a nobody, but maybe I don't have any brand identity. Well, I didn't want to go into something half-assed. I had custom boxes. I had t-shirts. I had stickers. I made everything out from the get-go so that day one launching, we're a brand. We are in existence. We are something that not like a self-absorbed way, but in that kind of how I had viewed, you know, celebrities or whatever, where they know who they are. They know what they do. They know what they're good at. They know that other people desire what they have and what they offer. And I think you have to go into anything. If you walked into Starbucks and they're like, well, maybe like our coffee is kind of, you'd be like, I'm going to leave. I don't want that. Or if a plumber showed up to your house, you're like, hey man, I got a leaky pipe. He's like, well, what do you want me to do? It's like, you're the plumber. You tell me, bro. Like, so anybody going into any field with a confidence, it has to be backed. They actually have to know what they're doing. The plumber can't just confidently come in and then screw up your pipes. But if you have the skill set, yeah, I think you need to like own it and do that.
One big thing that you just said that I want to make note on before we continue to rip is going from the way that you were self-guided through your transformation into knowing that if you're going to do this, it's going to be based on a level of specificity and quality. Do you think that a lot of that self-driven transformation is what gave you that insight? Because a lot of people that I know and work with, they usually create a brand or a logo and they hide behind it. Where someone like you who has all these accolades, all this confidence you built through the work you were able to do on your own is the logo represented everything you had done instead of the logo being the Wizard of Oz, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain complex that so many people do now with social media.
Yeah, I honestly, I have not thought of that since you've said that, but there is a, I think it's like in psychology, it's called the Dunning-Kruger principle. Mm-hmm. And it's people that know a lot, like an expert. My wife has her master's degree in family nurse practitioner. She's brilliant.
Yeah.
And somebody will ask her like, what do you think this rash is? And she's like, I'm not sure. I'd have to look. Like, she plays it down so low because she understands that the medical world is so broad. She can't just give you an answer. And then vice versa. You have somebody who's gone to EMT school, CPR. And they'll be the first one to tell you, oh, that looks like it's this rash and this, and you need to do this and this and this. So the Dunning-Kruger is like the people that know the most typically speak kind of the least and are more reserved because they understand and respect the field as a whole. And the people that know the least usually are kind of the loudest.
Yep.
So coming from doing a personal transformation, I totally built that self-confidence and self-realization of like, I know exactly what I'm doing because I've had to live through it and I've had to gone through it. And so instead of the brand being, like you said, something to hide behind, it almost just helped me give an actual voice. It's like, yeah, this is what I do.
Yeah.
This is what I've been able to prove. So yeah, 100%.
And I think that comes with a lot of significance and certainty. And this is something we've all heard. Like when you look at a logo, whether it has a type font to it or not, you know what that logo represents. You know, that's the brand archetype aspect of things. When you go down and you really analyze brand archetypes, when you look at Liquid Death, you understand what it represents based on like the rebellion, the counterculture, yada, yada, yada. You can do the same thing with things like Patagonia, with Coca-Cola, with fill in the blank. But a lot of people like, the logo itself needs to come with the same level of belief and the same level of relatability, the same level of trust that you've been able to build with the logo. Just like Jake had said, he loves to start things with the logo, but we work with so many artists who are so uncertain and unclear. They just want the logo because that's what's going to make them professional instead of building all of that personal belief to know that it is the icing on the cake. It becomes the packaging of the perfect product instead of just being the thing that almost manipulates to appear more professional than what they truly are, like psychologically.
And I think there's even more nuances within that. Like examples you use, Liquid Death. Okay, if they had incredible packaging, but then you bought a can and you taste it and it was like, this water tastes like it has a coin in it, you're never going to buy it again.
Yeah.
So the product actually has to be good. And the advertising logo has to be good. But then like even the fulfillment aspect, if you ordered Liquid Death and it took 6 months to get to you, it might be the best water in the world and they might have the coolest branding, but if they can't fulfill on time, well, then you're still going to not. So like there's so many nuances into the entire process from the second somebody DMs me, the way that I respond back mm-hmm. changes their perception of me.
Absolutely.
The way that I send an email when we onboard them changes their perception. The way we have group calls every Sunday morning at 7:30 changes their perception. Like, so yeah, I had to have a skill set. I had to have a brand, but there's like 7,000 things, and you guys all know it, but in between that, every one of those things has to be done. I'm not perfect, but I'd say 100%, like it has to be done to retain and build that trust and long-term relationship.
Dan, that's something I noticed in you early out is you're similar to Mikey and I, where we just figure it the fuck out. You know what I mean? It's like you, I don't think you've stopped since the day I met you, nor have I or Mikey. It's like we get so, you know, emotionally invested in these things that we don't know any other way, you know, other than 110%. That's just how we run, dude. Is that like a work ethic you've always had, or is that something you developed from since mentorship or vice versa?
I am 1000% clinically diagnosed with ADHD. Mm-hmm. And that has somewhat been a hindrance, but also somewhat of a superpower. And then you add in the addiction side, right? So I always need to chase something. I need to get that next little dopamine hit. I'm fully aware. I'm still an addict. It's just changed directions. So I've always had a curious personality. I've always wanted to find out things. I always want to absorb knowledge. But yes, as that has transitioned into my own business, well, now I want to know everything. I want to be the best of the best. I want to know every single thing. Yeah, it's never ending. I've got 6 things written down today that I got to do, and new workflows that I got to build, and automations in Zapier. And this has been going on for years now. Like every single day, I have 10 more things to do. But I think that anything, like Mikey kind of said it, it's like you've jumped in and you're not all the way set. It's like we're building a plane and trying to fly it, but it's, you know, both are happening at the same time. We're trying to take off, but we're still adding more pieces to it. But it's not like the plane isn't able to fly. I just want to keep making it better. I want to keep doing things that are making the system smoother. So yeah, I guess I've always been like that, but it's definitely taken off like 10,000% having my own company. And then now being sober, it's like, I'm all in on this.
What were the things that you had to let go of for you to be able to go full in on this? I don't mean like, you know, finding retirement and the eating habits and the obvious things that we could always recommend people do, but like the psychological things that held you in a certain place. The one thing that I still find, and again, like I agree with you, I'm not perfect. I'm just trying to innovate and escalate my capabilities because I'm in an inevitable chase to see what's possible. However, yeah. Every time I do, I find there are so many other things that I need to kind of exchange for this needs to come in, this needs to go out. What are the things that you see most commonly that you need to let go of for these new things, these new opportunities, these new belief systems to be possible?
What a good question. Yeah, I read a book and it was talking exactly about this. It was like to go to the next phase. If you're Michelangelo and you're building a sculpture, you have to get rid of a lot of stuff, but then you want to build a bigger sculpture. So you actually have to hire more people and you got to get rid of like 80% of what you're doing and outsource it and do other things. But that's not just like the physical stuff. I had to outsource a lot of stuff in my brain too. And for me, one of the biggest things to let go of was pride. As a fireman, it was like, that's pretty cool. It's kind of like an identity thing. Also, you don't know if social media is actually going to work. So like when you start posting, it's embarrassing. It is. I'm still not. I've grown to a level of comfort with myself where I'm so at peace. I get 1,000, literally probably 1,000 negative comments or something a day. And truly, if I started reading them all, yeah, it probably would affect me. But it's like, I just know I've grown to love who I am and seen that just being authentically me is who my family needs, is who my wife loves, is who I'm able to show up for my kids. So you could say 10,000 things, or you could say that I quit the fire department. You could say all these things. I don't care because I'm at home every single night. So it sounds weird, but I had to let go of pride. It was very hard for me to post myself, to be out there, to be vulnerable, to be, I spent a really long portion of my life pretending to be secure. Like, I'm the tough guy. I'm not struggling with anything. We have a perfect marriage. No, I was depressed. I got divorced. I was going to kill myself. And so when you've spent most of your life pretending to be secure, being vulnerable was a very scary spot to venture into. Now I'm like wide open, dude. I make posts straight up about suicide stuff. So, but pride was probably like my biggest thing, as weird as maybe that sounds, but it was like a really big issue for me. I felt super insecure stepping into like posting things and trying to give people advice when I myself am struggling. I felt really insecure leaving a job that gives you a direct deposit every 2 weeks and gives you financial stability and tells you, hey, in 20 more years, you're going to have a pension. There's a lot of pride that I had to get rid of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's cool, Dan, because, you know, when you went viral back in the day, I mean, you were probably, you know, back in the mentorship, you probably had like the most followers, the most views, you had gone viral multiple times. And Mikey and I discuss this a lot with people. And, you know, we've worked with Instagram coaches and all kinds of people on social media that do the hooks and do the training buyer or do the training audio and do this and do all the, you know, rip off and duplicates. But you were one of the originators that kind of use that rip off and duplicate to your advantage, because you were able to do the funny shit, the funny hooks, the trending audios, but still be your authentic self at an early stage of your career. So now, like, when you do it, it's not off brand. You, we see somebody that within our circle or that we know do the one off rip off and duplicate, and you're like, that's not your style, dude. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Can you kind of go into that for some of the viewers that may be wanting to grow their Instagram, like what you see now? Because I know you are very educated when it comes to the algorithm, the trends, the things that are happening on Instagram to probably wake up tomorrow and put a viral video out with no questions asked. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you started doing the rip off and duplicate and then moving into now content?
Yeah. Yeah. Instagram literally tells you what works. Go to your explore page and everything that's popping up is being seen by everyone else, and it means it's working. And if you see something that's got 500,000 views, it's probably going to work for you. So I follow all sorts of different niches. I don't follow mostly fitness accounts. I follow meme pages. I follow cooking pages. I follow a lot of construction pages. And if something is working in one of those,
yeah,
it's probably going to work for you. You just have to, like you said, rip off and duplicate. So take the format of it. Okay, they're in a car. Daniel Coffin is actually, I've been talking to him. He's great. But he was seeing all these videos of cutting boards. For some reason, cutting boards were like trending on Instagram. And it sounds stupid, but the algorithm literally can, the AI stuff, it'll see certain things and it'll push different content. Because it's, so cutting boards were trending and cooking. Well, he's a bodybuilder. So he just converted it to his thing. Now he's eating food in a car on a cutting board. And that became his thing. So I would just find something that's working. You got to make it work for you and then duplicate it. Now, I do want to buffer this. Mm-hmm. If you, there's two types of content, right? Like, yeah, virality is great, but does that actually convert to a paying client? Not necessarily. So it's super rad to have a video that goes 10 million views. Does that mean 10,000 paying clients? No, but I'll still buffer it. I would rather have 10,000 eyeballs because there might be 10 new paying clients in there. So rip off duplicate is not necessarily a formula for monetary success, but it does increase views, which increase engagement, which increases everything. I was up in my, I've got family up in Seattle and I see them once every 10 years. And I went up there for Christmas and they're like, it was the weirdest thing, dude. One of my friends sent me a video and it was you. So it's like, it is crazy. When something hits those 10, 20 million things, it's weird. Literally, people see you in different places. That doesn't mean they become a paying client. But yeah, rip off and duplicate is like, Instagram tells you what's working. You just go find a video. If it made you stop, if you're doom scrolling and you stopped and watched a video, you should probably set off a flag in your head. Like, why did this video make me stop? And how do I do that? Because if it made you stop, most of my clients are me's. They think and act the same way I do.
Now we have to pair two things you said, because a little bit ago you had your post-it notes, your new things you need to do. You have a plan of attack. And that goes back to the people believe that attention is the new form of currency, but if you don't know what to do with attention, then it just becomes stagnant water and validating. So how did you create the, well, let's call it the funnel, because that's what the algorithm requires of us and everybody. So how did you create the funnel from attention to the know, like, and trust factor enough to start converting that attention into paying clients?
So I started with virality, and that was just to get views. Views do nothing unless, like you said, you can convert it. So then I would put up content that specifically attempted to engage. I did start with ManyChat. Drop this keyword. Honestly, I got rid of that pretty quick. And I think even as a buyer myself, if I get an automated message back, it's like a turnoff.
Yeah.
So why would I be doing that to my, if I don't like that, they're not going to like that. So I don't use any automation right now. Full transparency. I also used to have setters in my DMs and it seemed easier to me, but they just don't speak the exact same language I do. Like a fireman will respond and there's just a nuance or a lingo or calling the job or the kitchen table and they wouldn't know. And so people, so I don't even have DM setters. So I put, I guess, maybe a lot more work on myself, but to answer the question, virality helps me get the views. Then I was making content that was very specific towards the people that I like to work with. Mm-hmm. And not to get super heavy right off the bat, but usually it's mental health, substance abuse, depression, and all those things tie in, because if we can start to have some self-trust, as in following through with hitting workouts, actually showing up to the store and starting to eat right. And if we can start to build self-trust because, wow, I'm actually doing something that now I start to lose weight. Now I see physical change. Now I'm actually thinking clearer because my cortisol is down and my endorphins are up and blah, blah. A lot of that transitions into that mental health space. So a lot of my content is based on the mental health. So I, virality, some funny reel, cool, it's awesome. We get 10 million views. Then I make something that's more specific. Hey, this is really heavy, but it's going to talk directly. And if you're making content for a specific person, the funnel aspect is pretty easy because right now, there's probably 30 messages that are stacked up. I made a post about suicide and I had literally probably 300 people reach out to me. Hey, dude, I'm struggling. Hey, man, I need to talk. Hey, this is weird. I usually don't reach out. I don't know if you're real. And that's it. I don't have to do anything else. I just have to be me. And I'm actually not even trying to sell anything to those people. It's literally just I have found my purpose in this. My pain was my purpose. Like, I get to just talk to people. And if they want to do something later in life, that's awesome. But I don't do any – I used to have a funnel and a flow and what made you reach out? And I am just me now. And in, I'm not saying this can work for everybody, but it seems to be much more respected when you're authentic than if people just think that you see them as a dollar sign.
That makes me really want to ask, were you this upbeat and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed when you were unhealthy, even as a mask? Or did that happen because of the work that you were able to do?
I was more upbeat and happy as a mask.
Yeah.
Complete facade. I would only show you. It was really easy to be the funny guy because then you never had to get to know me. If I just made you laugh and then I could leave the party and do the Irish goodbye. See you guys later. Yeah. And I never had to have a serious conversation. I never had to actually talk to you because I just could crack a one-line joke and everybody's like, oh my gosh, we love Dan. Like, he better be at the next party. And I never had to get deep and serious. So it's actually been an interesting balance now still because that is part of my identity, but I did use it as a mask.
Yeah.
And so sometimes now I actually feel inauthentic when I'm being bubbly and exciting, even though I'm like, I'm happy now. My life is not perfect, but man, I'm so blessed to be where I'm at. So I actually sometimes feel weird. Like, I feel like I'm supposed to be more serious now because my life is healed. And it's like, no, dude, you can still be yourself. But yeah, I was only bubbly and fake.
That's
totally true. I remember specifically, dude, when you ran one of your first posts, I don't know. I think you're like, if I can remember, dude, you're like in the mountains or you're outside and you did like a serious. And I remember watching it, waiting for you to crack a joke. But then I was like, oh, shit, this is deep. And I remember talking to you about it. And it's like you got a lot of praise for it, dude, because nobody had seen that side of you. And I remember, I can't remember the day exactly, but it was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was an ad or if it was just a reel you did, but yeah, I remember Sydney was like the stand-up comedian who's cracking one, and then he starts speaking serious and everyone keeps laughing. He's like, no, I'm being serious. And they're still laughing. It's like the Jim Carrey part in whatever movie that was when he's acting as what's his name. I can't think of it. But
it's the most vague shit I've ever heard in my life. That? Dude, that was the most vague shit I've ever heard in my entire life. That one Jim Carrey movie where he's acting the part. I don't remember what it's called.
I can't remember. It's the old Taxi Driver movie. Not Taxi Driver with Albert.
Jim Carrey and Taxi Driver would be awesome.
Well, I think you actually just kind of nailed it, though. Like, if you actually look at some real documentaries with Jim Carrey, Jim Carrey's very open about it now.
Yeah.
But Robin Williams, for example, too, the happiest, loudest clowns are the most miserable, right? Mm-hmm. Usually they are the ones struggling the most. And it's almost a projection, right? Like, I wish somebody was making me laugh and me be happy. But since nobody is, I'm going to make you laugh and you be happy. And so that's a lot of, like, Jim Carrey, I actually kind of like him now. He's like, you know, the character I've gotten to play of Jim Carrey was a great character, but like the reality of life. So yeah, I think you nailed it, dude. It was a weird transition for me to actually become vulnerable, for me to actually open up, and put so even last night I posted a picture in the bathroom just as an accountability. I track all my data too, just like I do my clients. I track my stuff. And, I was noticing that I was not changing. My muscles were staying the exact same size. My weight was staying the exact same. I'm trying to bulk, trying to get bigger. So I put up a little accountability post last night. Even that to me is weird. I like to have the professional shoot. I like to have the lighting that makes you look like you have abs and, you know, makes your muscles look bigger. And I am heavily leaning into authenticity. People used to follow the celebrities. They want to follow the Kardashians. They want to know everything. People don't really want that anymore. They mm-hmm. want to see Jake. They want to see Mikey. They want to just see a real person struggling as well, but well, doing
as bad, as bad as it sounds, dude, I think people want to see the fails, not because they're cheering for you to fail, but they want to see the fuck ups. They want to see the imperfections. They want to see the flaws because, especially now with AI, it's like you don't know what to believe. So when someone comes on, they're just like, hey, I didn't feel like going to the gym, man. I fucking ate like shit last night, but guess what? I showed up anyways, and I was able to spend time with – when they start talking about their flaws and that they're just normal human beings that are dads that were late to pick up their kids on Tuesday from school because something happened. Like, I think we're moving – I'm hoping that we're moving in that direction with social media because now you just don't know what's real and what's fake. And when you open yourself up to just letting it out, you're not faking that. It's just like, no, I fucked up. I was an addict, and I did do this, you know, so – and I think you nailed that perfectly with your content, dude.
People want relatability. Mm-hmm. That's it. They don't care about following, I don't even know, Chris Pratt.
We started using the word relatability over authenticity because authenticity became another word like mentor and guru. And I'm being authentic, but no the fuck you're not. You're still using a filter. You're still cutting and editing. But when you say
you're only posting the highlights.
And the highlights. So when you're being
relatable. Not a highlight reel.
Yeah, I think relatability has such a harder definition now than authenticity because authenticity has just become another word like brand or coach or mentor or influencer. It's like, oh yeah, I'm being authentic. It's like, the fuck you're not.
You know? Authenticity got partnered with the whole body image movement thing though. You know what I mean? Where authentic didn't mean I'm genuinely being me. What it meant was I'm comfortable with me being me, unhappy, and it's your job to validate that. My authenticity is now my safe space, not my moving vessel. You know, and that's where the problem really comes in is we've rewritten so many powerful statements that once upon a time had substance that now nothing means anything, which means anything can be rewritten. And I think that's where the confusion comes in. You had said something earlier, Jake, about with AI, you don't really know what to trust. And I have noticed a weird uptick trend of people engaging with AI more because trust was dropped when everybody became a facade, where AI now gives people a new thing to not have to doubt or question because everyone uses it. Everyone puts their trust in their AI. So that's going to be the next big fucking problem is it's the manipulators behind the keyboard creating the reel that they can't judge the book by its cover anymore because it's the new messiah of information production.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. No, it's a very changing dynamic. And that's what's hard, though, is I don't want to say understanding buyers, right? But like understanding society as a whole, because we continue to go through these different phases. Like, okay, even me, I used to go hang out at the mall. My kids don't do that now. They like just life as a whole has changed in the way that they receive information, the way that they socialize, the way that they will be out with my 13-year-old daughter. And she'll be like, oh, I know that person. I'm like, go say hi. She's like, no. And she'll text him. I just saw you.
Yeah, I do.
So like relationships and how people integrate and correlate with one another just continues to evolve and change. And that maybe is actually the hardest kind of part for me, is understanding how do I storytelling. What I do is storytelling. Yep. I want to be able to tell my story in a way that is easily digestible and in a way that you receive it and see my heart and that it affects your heart. So learning how to continue developing and evolving my storytelling capabilities that will consistently hit the changes that are going through society is really difficult. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're jack of all trades, dude. It's going to kind of lead me completely off topic, dude, but I don't even know if Mikey knows this, but us working with so many tattoo artists, you yourself can do a little bit of tattooing. Let's talk on how the fuck that happened.
No, see, you're going to judge me immediately, Mikey. I have not That's been fine. Apprenticed. Okay, I haven't done anything. When I was 14, I liked tattoos, right? So you get a sewing needle and a pen and you start. Actually, the first one I ever did, I had a razor blade. And I didn't understand tattooing at all, okay, right? It's just like I need to get ink in the skin. So I thought, oh, I'll just cut a little cross and pour ink on it.
Yep.
That's not how it works. You start bleeding and no ink comes out or no ink goes in and just a lot of blood comes out.
Yeah.
It wasn't self-harm. It was like, oh, that didn't work. So then I got to back this up. At 14, I did not have a phone or really the internet to like – I couldn't just Google how to do a prison tattoo.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then I like my older sister, her boyfriend was covering tattoos. So I was like, oh, and he was like, oh yeah, they have a tattoo gun, you know, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. So I got a sewing needle and I started, you know, doing stick and pokes on my leg. Anyways, that evolved to where, yes, I eventually bought a legit, you know, tattoo setup and I have tattooed probably 90% of my legs by myself.
Okay.
Which, it's worked out great.
The thing is, that's where everybody should start. You know, tattoo artists have the worst fucking tattoos for a few simple reasons. A, you got to start somewhere. And B, they're free if you're hanging out with bored tattoo artists who don't have any clients. You just wind up covered in trash. I've got half my body's blacked out now, not because it's hip, but because my shit sucked to such a degree, I was willing to go the extra mile. You know what I mean?
I'm going to have to send you a picture. Yeah, I'm not going to get them covered. I have done a decent job on my own skin.
They're pretty fucking clean, dude.
They're good enough.
Yeah. Mine were demonic, devil worshiping. I'm an angsty young adult tattoos. It was like, nah, this doesn't really track. I'm a new dad. I've got a 3-year-old. Yeah. I didn't want him to have an opinion on it because he wouldn't for a while. But the thought of being the dad at the pool with a giant 666 back piece with my new toddler just gave me a fucking weird feeling, man. So
this is where legit artists, they'll look at my legs. Cause I was like, what am I good at? So I tried some single needle ones. I tried some traditional, I wouldn't call it hyper realistic, but like a more well shaded rose. I tried stippling. So there's like a bunch of different, like anybody that actually knows would be like, this is a bunch of different styles. But also, I guess it's like I've got, you know, somewhat hyper-realistic, and I've got kind of Chicano. My whole back is that light, soft gray wash.
Yeah.
I've got a bunch of traditional American. So I do have a blend. But, yeah, if you actually looked at my legs, you're like, that's weird.
I'm excited, too.
I'll send you a picture, dude.
Didn't somebody just come down, someone in the circle, and you tattooed them? Am I tripping?
You're not tripping, dude. You know Brandon?
It was Brandon Hill, right?
Yeah, he was down here.
Shit, okay.
I thought it was Brandon. It's crazy because Mikey just tattooed Brandon. So I remember, I'm like, Mikey just, or Dan just tattooed somebody. I'm like, oh,
he was down here. We crushed a workout and then we were doing something. He actually jumped on here. He was like, dude, I need to take a Zoom call. I was like, well, I've got a setup for you. I was like, just turn this thing off so they don't think. He's like, oh, whatever. And then he was like, you want to blast my knuckles? And I was like, dude, I've never tattooed anybody's knuckles. And he's like, okay, perfect. I was like, what? So actually, I should see if they actually healed up. But those, it looked good, you know, the second after.
They're clean, dude. I see him once a week. He and I live like pretty much next to each other.
I did those, bro.
Yeah, I was okay. That tracks. What's funny, because I don't think he knows that. Like, I don't think he connected all the dots. But he was just like I can't remember the story he had told me about getting them done, but he definitely didn't say directly that you had done them. And I just tattooed the back of his neck. Yeah, I just tattooed the back of his neck last week.
I love this.
Dude, that's epic.
Here at Letter Rip, the breaking news. This
is that is so random that there's that connection. I had no idea that you guys knew each other, nonetheless, in person.
Yeah, we go to church together. We are friends now. You know, we are connected in faith.
And they actually healed up?
Yeah, they actually look, I mean, they look good. Knuckles aren't fucking easy because the skin sucks a bucket of buttholes. You know what I mean?
Well, I've done my own like wedding ring, and I've done some other little tiny ones. I do not advertise that I do tattoos. I don't set, it's like some random friend is like, hey man, will you? And then they tell me for a year and I'm like, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah.
So I've known enough because I blew out my finger and I was like, you got to go shallow on knuckles. You got to just get in there enough without it bleeding and then you're set.
Yeah. Well, then you're as good as 75% of the tattoo artists who all have tats at the end of their fucking Instagram handle. So welcome.
Perfect. Welcome. I'm going to go start my own shop.
There you go.
Just start that. Just make the brand now. Ibex Tats.
Yep.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. You just jump right into your own private studio, appointment only. You know what I mean? That's what everybody else did, and they seem to be doing fair.
Yeah, I love it, dude. That's so rare.
I know. Also, dude, you're you know, now that we're talking about tattoos, I know you're a big metalhead, dude. You know, did you? I don't think I ever asked you. Did you ever play any instruments, or were you just a showgoer?
Oh, dude, I'm a nerd, man. I grew up playing the piano. My parents put me in piano lessons.
This is the most metal thing I'll say is I wish I learned how to play piano. I beg my daughter. I'm like, please will you take lessons? Because the piano is so universal, which means you can probably play any fucking instrument, Dan, right?
Oof, no, I don't think I could, dude. I've tried. My wife's dream is that I play guitar and then I can serenade her. And I literally have tried to learn. And it's just, it's like I play this way, not this. It's, I don't know. I probably could. But I've never given it the old college try. So maybe I actually need to go take a class.
For sure. I love that.
Dude, I love music.
What bands are you listening to right now?
I don't know why, but I have gone on a 20-year rewind. And for some reason this last week, I've been listening to like Seether and 3 Days Grace and Him and like all these early 2000, like, I don't know why, it just all of a sudden I got hooked up. Shoot. What else? Not metal. I've been crushing a lot of Lil Peep. It's good, dude. It's super good. It's a vibe.
You just can't take anything with little before the name serious.
Well, yeah, it's the classic, you know, white dude, drug addict that overdosed. But some of his stuff, and actually, maybe that's why a lot of his songs resonate a lot with me. Yeah. Substance.
Well, that's like NF to me. That's like NF to me. Everything.
Yeah, dude, I love NF.
Like NF is like, I heard him and I'm like, fuck, dude. At first, I'm like, another white dude rapping. And then you start hearing, and you're like, fuck, this kid gets it.
Yeah,
and
yeah, he goes pretty fast. The next
song just gets deeper, and it's like, fuck. So it's Lil Peep, kind of like that genre.
Lil Peep is more, I don't want to call it lo-fi, but he's like more of a kind of a slowed down, usually samples a lot of his music, right? Like you'll hear something like, I feel like I recognize that. Like, where's that backtrack from? I'll send you some songs, dude. And I'm not saying he's
I probably heard it on NF's like, you know, radio station.
I probably shouldn't even be vouching for Lil Peep. He's he wasn't a great guy. But for some reason his music is resonating heavily with me this last week.
I mean, there's been some shit in the music industry coming out. This isn't a political platform. Yeah. My God, where is music gone, bro? And just,
well, so that's what I'm struggling a lot with in the music industry as a whole. Most of the songs that I hear, even on the radio, they take a song from 10 years ago and they use the entire song what's that like? It's my party, I'll cry if I want to. There's a whole song that's literally just that. They added like one hook to it. Like, where has, and I get it, there's only eight notes, right? But you can make a lot of different music with those eight notes and different, I don't even want to call it instruments now, but digital, all the stuff they do. Like, you can make music a thousand different ways, and there's still bands that do it, right? Like Coldplay, you can tell it's Coldplay. All their songs sound like Coldplay. But man, they use different keys and transposing things and time signatures. And they get all Radiohead, Muse. There's a lot of bands that like were like music theory. And that stuff is crazy. Metal, actually. I love Lorna Shore and bands like that because whether you realize it or not, most of their riffs and stuff are actually classically based. Like, they're doing time signature changes. They're doing all sorts of crazy things that if you're just hearing it, you're like, well, that sounds freaking cool. But if you actually know music theory, you're like, holy crap, that's incredible. And then you hear most of the mainstream stuff, and it is just literally a recycled song. It's like,
there was
Lorna Shore is on another level right now, and supposedly this year for deathcore, I mean, we're already seeing arenas filled out with deathcore, which is like, you know, bless. Oh God, what was I going to say? Anyways, sorry, cut that part, Steve.
You won't.
I totally lost it, Mitch. You know, Suicide Silence. Do we have him to thank? I think bringing that mainstream deathcore. To the masses, dude, because it's only evolved since that band has erupted, you know, given the Whitechapels and these other guys. But Lorna Shore just takes it to another. And when you see these guys' live production and their stage presence, it's like, this is a fucking concert. We're talking like they outdo Iron Maiden in the 80s kind of shit.
And I think it actually goes back to what we were talking about. The reason a lot of these bands like Lorna Shore are doing so well is because they're so relatable. Like, if you just, he is the weirdest guy. He just is on social media. He's just himself. And people relate to that. And like, he tells his story. There's one of their newest songs was Glenwood. And it's like this really sad song. And it's this kid struggling at home. And at the end, you realize, oh, it's actually like his life story. And he talks to his dad at the end that he hadn't talked to for a decade. Relatable, dude. I'm all about it.
Yeah. I think a lot of it, like, one big thing that people used to say was like, steal like an artist. You know what I mean? Everything is a small bite from something else they had already previously seen that they really enjoyed. That's how we figure out our fashion. That's how we figure out our personalities when we're younger. It's how we do art. But there's a blatant difference between steal like an artist and blatant ripping off.
Plagiarize.
But I think, I mean, when you look at, like you had said, Lorna Shore or even, the huge transition that even a band like Falling in Reverse had made after Derek had passed away. It's the theatrics. It's the individuality. It's the never say die. It's still that sex, drugs, and rock and roll attitude. Maybe not without the substances and the debauchery, but like with that, I am me, suck it, fucktards. You know what I mean? I think people are attracted to that because it's what most people yearn for and lack in the way society has become so, average. You know, it used to be the alternative, but now everyone is obligated. As Jake had said, this isn't a political like platform by any means, but people are so obligated to pick a side that when you look at bands like this, they're just genuinely themselves without giving a fuck. Ronnie Radke isn't on a political side. He's just a fuck you. I am who I am. People yearn for that. I think it's in our human nature to rebel in such a capacity. But Jake and I say pretty frequently, like, becoming successful, doing the things, following the path you had said that you did with your own self-guided transformation is true success and is true rebellion. While everyone does what everyone else is doing, there are those who stand out simply by playing by the beat of their own drum in a sense. You know, and that's what draws people to a band. You could be a subpar tattoo artist, you could be a subpar musician, but if you have a personality and you are you genuinely and, dare I say, authentically, then you're going to have so much more attention and so many people get behind you. I don't think anybody can escape the know, like, and trust factor at this point because of things like the Kardashians, like you had said earlier. Like, we were so hyper fixated on reality TV that now people go to social media for small clips to be able to get their dopamine hit of seeing what's possible or seeing that you're not wrong or seeing that there is a path forward. And they do it because attention spans are so short. They're not going to wait through the commercial break. they're going to doom scroll stories and what's on their Explorer page.
I think actually two things you said, beating to your own drum and counterculture, totally different, but beating to your own drum, that is actually what gave me a lot of confidence is when I was still in the fire service, we all did it, but people will jab at you, right? And it's like, yeah. Oh, is this meal Ibex approved? And this is meal. And the funniest part is those dudes are still at work right now. Worst case for me, I'll have to go back to a 9-to-5 job, but I'm doing my own thing right now. So people can chirp and say whatever they want, but if you authentically believe what you're going to do is going to work, it's going to be way better off. Yeah. And then counterculture, this is totally not at all what I was talking about. I think it's so wild to see in the music industry, pretty much as a whole, actually even within celebrities, every single person was doing drugs and alcohol to where now it's more attractive to them to not do it. Like we want to be counterculture again. So almost everybody, even Ronnie, right? They're like preaching sobriety. They're preaching, and it's like such a crazy shift to see in the mainstream world, or even non, you know, I know Lorna Shore is, well, they're probably more mainstream, but a lot of people don't know any of these metal bands. It's so wild to see that most of these celebrity type influences are preaching sobriety. Yeah, no, I don't do drugs. Yeah, no, or I'm California sober, whatever. It's kind of cool that now that that's counterculture, and it's like, yeah, it's cool to, I don't want to say it's cool, but it's cool to be freaking sober and healthy.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, but I think it's just like anything else. The pendulum eventually swings twice as hard in the other direction, you know, and you can thank people like Lil Peep for like Xanax rap and all that shit, because there came a point in time where that's what culture became, to the point where people wanted to stand out and beat by their own drum. And usually that's going to be the alternative worldly view from what you see everyone else doing. It's not necessarily always a moral thing. It's just what everyone is doing.
Yep.
Isn't looking too attractive anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. And I see it in Styles, our 13-year-old. It's coming back to the 2000s. My wife is passing her down her Ed Hardy. And so it's like, oh, this is back in style. Here you go. Here's some True Religion jeans that are from the 90s that fit you perfectly now. And she's like, oh, my
God. Yeah, it's a trip you just said the jeans, because I went to Disneyland on Friday with my kids and my niece and then my sister. My sister, being a few years older than me, she's got like her daughter's pant looking like the baggy things. And even Ange came back from like Ross the other day. She's like, look at these pants. I'm like, are those JNCOs? Like,
she is straight up rocking my wife's clothes from the early 2000s. It is
like my daughter, Allie, she's like, she's got the holes in her knees and she's got like the baggier. And I'm just like, interesting. I'm waiting for them to like throw on some DCs or some old, like, you know.
She owns a couple pairs of DCs.
I heard those are coming back too.
Yep. They're back.
Like, what year would that be? Like early 90s skater punk? Like what would
I think it's like 90s, 2000s.
Yep.
Yeah. Roller skating kind of gear.
I saw Hurley's. I saw an ad for Hurley's, Wheelies the other day. The shoes with the wheels so you can get to the place faster and look cool doing it. Do a little, like, it's like a mobile parkour.
Because everything's motorized and rolling. There's no more kids walking or riding their bikes. You know, like, for Christmas, I had to get my daughter's beach cruisers because I just was fed up. I'm like, we're going on a bike ride. We're doing this. So I think the wheelies are just to get around faster, Mike. I'm not about that.
I think that was the original segue. I would like to thank the Heelys, is I think what they're called. Like that escalated into the segue.
Yeah.
You know, so it everything is innovation and evolution, you know?
Well, fuck, I'm seeing every teenage boy on an e-bike now, not even pedaling. I'm like, fuck, that is so dumb. But I'm like, God, I wish I had one when I was a kid. I want one now.
They're literally just electric motorcycles. They go like 45 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So gnarly. I would have killed myself.
You know that's what it is, because if you have a DUI, you're still not allowed to purchase them.
Yeah, no, those ones actually, so if they don't have the pedals, it's not pedal assist. Mm-hmm. And if they go above, I think it's 25, they are literally considered an electric motorcycle. Like, you have to have your MC on your DL to have it.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting the pedals, because you could go more places with that thing.
So rad.
Yeah, and just like, we're going to need four of them. I'm like, you're going to need a second job is what you're going
to need. Yeah, dude. I was looking at them, and like, if you're, depending on how you go, but like the electric motorcycle ones and like nice one, they're like $15,000.
Yeah. The pedal ones aren't bad. I got a buddy that actually, he's got like, he knows, he's about four now. So he's like, Jake, when you get the kids e-bikes? I'm like, motherfucker, we just had Christmas and four birthdays, dude. Summer, mother. Like, give me a break. But he's like, dude, when you're ready, like he knows like the Facebook marketplace or like exactly what to look for the price point. I'm like, all right, cool. So that's the next big purchase for me at some point.
But we need to get we need to get custom cuts. Like we're starting a scooter gang, but we only use like the ones that you can rent on the side of the street. And that's when there's real gang activity occurring. When we're on those bright green scooters, just rolling around in our cuts, real sick patch on the back.
You said scooter, but you don't mean like Vespa. We're not doing like a Vespa gang.
No, no, no. That's been done. No. I mean like rentable like mobile big city scooters.
Bird scooters.
Yeah.
Well, that would include you moving to an actual really cool state like California, Mikey.
Well, you just said an oxymoron there.
Fuck off. It's a really cool state. I know exactly what you're going to have to do.
Is it?
We hopefully got a couple changes coming here very shortly.
Prove it.
Prove it, yeah. We have a bet. Me and Mikey have a bet. If I'm not going to say his name, but Bianco becomes governor, Mikey's moving to the state.
I'm in.
Yeah. So what's up? What's next for you, Dan? Like, I know you're doing 1,000 things right now, but what is your – I know you were kind of shifting with a couple companies that you're working. I won't name the businesses unless you want to get into it. But like, I know you've been adventuring out on a few different things. You're like, what does Dan have going on right now?
I'll give a double answer. Dan's actual goal in life is truly to just show up better for my kids, my wife, my family. So everything that I've been doing has been so rad to see that it actually allows me to do that.
Yeah.
Like, okay, cool. 10:30, we can jump on a Zoom. I can take you to school drop off. I can take you off that. So with that said, every move I'm making is to either solidify that or to increase that. And even though I'm adding more things, it's actually lightening the load on my plate so that I can show up more and be more present and financially free and all the above. So we're still doing Ibex. Consistently just talking to people in the DMs, bringing on new clients, a bunch of different, you know, from the cheap monthly $25 a month, you get an app to sure work with me one-on-one and it's thousands. So evolving that, I started another business in the health space, you know, doing the old peptides. So building that out and seeing that continue to evolve and scale and learning all the nuances and legalities within that. That is its own thing. And like we talked about earlier, it's like we started it and then it evolves and we're building the plane as we're flying. So that's been exciting. I'm excited. I don't have a set, like this is where I want to be. I don't have like I do have a vision board and I do have a 5-year plan.
Yeah, it's like, what are your macro micro goals? You know what I mean? Like,
so macro goals, honestly, long-term 10 years, I would love to retire. Like, stuff is either just passive income, real estate, etc., you know, where you're still having to do some property management, but I'm just living life. I could never actually retire because I just need a purpose. I need things to do. So I still would want to have things set up, but I would love to not have to come sit at the computer for 5 hours a day, 6 hours a day, 12 hours a day. I would love to not have to jump on sales calls, business calls, that kind of thing. So I would still love to run things, but more from a managerial standpoint, probably that kind of thing. But that's, we're talking macro, 10-year goals. The micro goals continue to, it sounds cliche in my head, but it's honestly like just to really help keep getting people healthy. I look at it way more, I operate kind of differently with my clients. I'm not the coach that's like, you failed because we didn't hit these macros for the, I don't even harp on people. It's usually like, why, what happened? What was going on? Why did that happen? I probably too much so harp more on the emotional and intellectual side than just the commitment side. I don't care if you didn't go to the gym for a week, but why, what happened? What was the mental block there? What was actually causing the resistance? And then if we can unpack that, well, then we can make you unstoppable because we can figure out what the roadblocks are. We can figure out. But if people don't ever name or identify the problem, then how do we solve it? That's like literally what got me into trouble was I didn't know how to name my emotions. I didn't know, and therapy helped me unpack. Oh, weird. If you can actually put a name to an emotion, you can probably start dealing with it. So the micro goals are like legitimately, dude, I just want to keep trying to help as many people as possible. Yeah. If that helps me financially, that's pretty awesome as well. The peptide side, we have been doing extremely well with individual clients. We are branching into the wholesale side, working with clinics and doctor's offices. That's its own beast.
Now, you coach, not to cut you off right there, but are you coaching your clients through peptides or is it just a handoff shake? Do you incorporate that with your Ibex Fitness at all?
So I didn't tell a single person at Ibex that I had started a peptide company, and they started seeing making posts, and literally my clients were like, what is this? Like, are you sponsored by them? And I was like, no, actually I started this. Yeah. So I very intentionally didn't use it as a leverage to make more money off my clients, but I did use it as a, like a positional force. Yeah. Here is an actual viable resource. So people that have wanted it, yes, they have it. We get into the fun game with the FDA where I can't tell anybody here's how much to take and here's what to do. And for all I know, it is a research peptide that they don't do anything with, but we're working with a doctor so that we can have a medical director. So that is like the next kind of big goal is have it become an actual, medical oversight, have a med director.
What I love to hear about all this, and this is becoming more and more common as Jake and I are doing these interviews, sitting down with people that we know, is the tangible product. Going from building the brand, building the authority and the authenticity, and then moving into a tangible product, something that somebody can truly hold, utilize, that can produce a result, or a more than just a service, but an actual like product development. Does something feel more legitimate and significant as it becomes more of a tangible product business, or because it's already you at your core, it's always felt legitimate and this is just another thing that you've added to the resume?
Both, but I will say that this 1000% feels more tangible and legitimate because, just like we talked about earlier, when I started Ibex, I had boxed everything. I won't show brands or whatever, but like we do everything where it is like a custom box with cut out things and holographic label, like every single aspect of it down to the bag it's shipped in to the custom tape I put on the bag, like every single step. And the fulfillment side, you get a text message that says this and thank you. And you get an email that says this and you get some of the mailer and we throw in freebies. Am I allowed to say different brands? Five Guys in their training manual, if you buy French fries, they fill up the cup with a scoop and they put it in your bag, and then they fill up a second cup and they dump it in your bag. Their burgers are crazy expensive and they're okay, but honestly, In-N-Out's better. You'll buy a a $15 burger and it's just a burger. But then you open your bag and you're like, there are so many French fries in here. Oh my gosh. So we do the exact same tangible things. We throw in freebies. We give people different products. We'll throw in extra stuff because I find so much more value in a returning customer that believes in something and sees it. So yeah, it's so much more legitimate having like an actual physical product, having something that people call you up afterwards. Dude, thanks so much for that handwritten note. Like, I don't know. In very few jobs have I ever, even as a fireman, I don't think, unless they put it in a file somewhere, I never once got like a thank you card from a family or something. And that was like saving, we didn't do it every day, but that was like changing people's lives. And now I get phone calls from people that are like, dude, I'm so excited for working with you for the last year. My body's changed. I'm off medication, blah, blah. Dude, this packaging was so incredible. So yeah, being able to do something tangibly and have like, physical, that's what my brain needs. I have all these ideas, but yeah, seeing something in physical form that I thought of, dang, that gives you a lot more self-confidence. That absolutely boosts me up 100%. I would be lying if I said I didn't.
One thing that I learned years ago that kind of changed the way that I approach everything, even the social media space and the coaching, mentoring, whatever, was that the package is as important as the product, is as important as the brand, you know? And so the hard thing for a lot of people that I've come to find is how do you package something virtually when it comes to social media? But I think it that is up to you. If you understand your brand, if you understand your product or service, then the packaging is just, it's exactly that. It's how do you encompass those things to show that this is more valuable than the competitor, or to at least show people the nuances of care that goes into everything you touch. Because if one thing is just like, it's a box with some fucking tape, when you open it, you're going to love it. You know what I mean? I promise. But then when they see that box and it's beautifully labeled, and there's so much more to it than what most people are used to seeing, some people think it's just a bag, it's just a box. But when all of it is a joy to see, to experience, and then to use, it's so different. It changes the entire outcome of your business, their experience, and even the outcome that they can get from it.
There is a reason why certain brands are so expensive. It is the status. Yep. It's the emotion. You can go buy a bag that's probably going to last longer at Target than you could from Louis Vuitton. But when you walk into Target, you can go pick out your own bag. When you walk into Louis V, they're going to greet you, and they're going to walk you over, and they're going to ask you what you're looking for, and they're going to hand... Honestly, it's probably the same quality of a bag. There's probably better stitching on something from Target. Literally, like, not to bash Louis V, but like, it's a bag, right? But no, it's buying a status. It's buying a symbol. It's buying something. And is it actually intrinsically worth $6,000 more? Hell no. No, it's not. It is not worth $6,000 more. But it is because of the value they've placed within it. So yeah, I want to be able to take something that's intangible and make it a tangible. And that's much harder in the health space, because I have clients that come to me with an intangible. I want to be healthy.
Yeah.
How do you convince them that, trust me, follow the process and we'll get there. And that's what I've had to learn, overused analogy. But like, if you're planning a vacation to Hawaii, your travel agent doesn't tell you, okay, well, listen, your kids are probably going to be crying, and you're going to have to take the Uber for the red eye, and you're going to have to spend 2 hours at TSA, and they might lose one of your bags, and you're going to have a 6-hour flight. They don't tell you that. They say, can you imagine yourself with your feet in the sand, drinking that Mai Tai on the beach with the sunset? And so being able to sell that intangible is hard when it's people coming to you with real problems. Hey, I have a real health issue. Hey, I'm struggling in my marriage because I've let myself go, because I have gotten fired from my job, because I have whatever it is. So helping them see that toes in the sand on the beach is difficult. But like you said, being able to package that and give them something where that is literally why I send them a water bottle, and I send them a t-shirt, and I send them keychains, and I send them a sticker, because you take something that's intangible and all of a sudden you're part of something. Stores have known this for forever. We wear a uniform because you are able to see that that person is part of something. They work here. They have an identity. They have an ownership. And giving somebody a tangible physical thing while they're doing something that on the initial is kind of intangible. You don't just magically lose weight. You don't magically just get strong. You don't magically just get your mind right. It gives them that tangible. It gives them that identity. So yeah, it's been a kind of a battle, but it seems to be working, getting tangible and intangible to pair up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my last question is, what's the most exotic animal you've ever ridden?
I've actually ridden a few, but, I don't know if it's really considered exotic though, but like a camel I've been on. I was in Israel and we got to ride on a camel. I've gotten to ride on an elephant. I called it, Mike.
Yep.
Yeah. But I wanted something. I was like trying to rack my brain. Like, have you ever ridden a capybara or something like that? That'd be cool to say. No, I think it's just a camel and elephant, dude.
I'm going to ask Dan. I said, I guarantee he's ridden them all.
Yeah. And I wasn't allowed to say what's the most exotic person you've ever ridden. So,
well, I mean, my wife is half Japanese, so sorry, she's gonna watch this now. I'm gonna get in trouble.
That's not getting edited, Steve.
Yeah, well, we wasn't gonna edit the first one. Why the hell would he wait till the second?
Yeah. Fucking hey, well, Dan, dude, thank
this
you
is so actually hard. Bothersome, dude. I'm gonna have to find a like a legit exotic animal. Like, I want to say that I've ridden an alligator.
Yeah.
Is that exotic though? Would reptiles be considered exotic?
More than a camel like, or an elephant, I would say. Yeah, absolutely.
Peacocks or like ostriches or something. Like, wouldn't those be exotic?
Or maybe a large cat.
There it is. Yeah.
Cougar. Not a house cat, like a tiger or a panther.
Or a cheetah or something.
Oof, yeah. I've ridden some cougars.
So there's been some bobcats in my neighborhood as of lately.
I'm out. That scares me.
Yeah. Well, fucking hey, Dan, dude, I knew this was gonna be a great topic, dude. I'm sure we're gonna rendezvous again and just keep kicking ass, dude. You've always been a good dude. We're overdue for a lift, even though we live 10 minutes apart. You're on a Zoom right now and feel like you're in another state. I'm like, oh, right, two neighborhoods down. My kids probably are gonna go to dance with your kids, but I want to run this back again, bro. I look forward to all your success, man. Just you continuing to help firefighters and all the blessings, bro.
Thank you guys. Truly, thank you for having me.
Fucking A.